In the last lecture, what we did, especially in the second half of the lecture, is we looked at some of the poems that are within the Pentateuch, and we saw how they quoted each other, how they connected with each other, often by a quotation of a verse. And in doing that, they built up a picture of the promised seed, singular. We also saw that the seed promise, which goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, has two parts to it. Predominantly, one is looking for the seed of the Genesis 3 promise, the individual who is going to crush the serpent's head. But we're also taught to look for the descendants of Abraham as also being a promised seed. And we know that these descendants are the nation of Israel. And so these two aspects of the seed go together. They both run together, and they're both included within the covenant that God gave to Abraham. This is an unconditional covenant, and therefore the promises within that covenant oath are God's and God's alone to fulfill. He's the one who entered into the oaths, therefore he's the one who is obligated to bring them to pass. And so what I want to do in this lecture is to look more deeply into the poetic framework of the Pentateuch. There are four major poems that are placed at strategic locations within the Pentateuch, which focus our attention upon this promised seed, this individual. And I want to study that out and connect it to a few things outside of the Pentateuch, so you can begin to get a picture of the very strong place that the promised seed has for Moses, who of course is the author of the first five books of the Bible. Now these four poems are in Genesis 49, Exodus 15, Numbers 23 and 24, particularly Numbers 24, and Deuteronomy chapter 32, and especially chapter 33. And so we're going to take a look at these four poems that frame the Pentateuch and build up a picture of this individual, the promised seed. So looking first at Genesis 49, look at verse 1. And Jacob called his sons and said, "Gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days." Notice that. In the last days. Now, in the prophetic literature, this term, in the last days, refers to the messianic kingdom in the end times, what is commonly known as the millennium and beyond. It's found four times in the Pentateuch, in three of the poems, in Numbers and in Deuteronomy, and it's also found in Deuteronomy 4. But here we are, Genesis 49. The context then is Jacob, at the end of his life, predicting what's going to happen to these 12 tribes. Look at verse 8. We've looked at this before. "Judah, you are he whom your brothers shall praise." So Judah is going to be exalted. We know, of course, that Jesus, the Messiah, comes from Judah. "Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you." Then we have this reference to Judah being compared to a lion, a lion's whelp, a lion that crouches down, verse 9. And this lion from Judah is being given a scepter in verse 10. The scepter, of course, is the token of a king. It depicts the rule of a king. And so the king is going to come from Judah. In fact, the true line of kings does come from Judah, through David, of course. And the scepter will not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, that is ancient parlance dealing with posterity, until he who comes to whom it belongs. Or, in some translations, until Shiloh comes. Notice, to him shall the obedience of the people be. And so, what we have is a prediction here by Jacob that in the last days will come from Judah a king who is to be a lawgiver, whose right is to the kingship, the scepter of Israel, and all the peoples will be obedient to him. Now, of course, anyone who's read the historical books in the Old Testament knows there was an awful lot of disobedience in the time of the kingdom. But here, there is going to be compliance. And so that's the first thing. This is an individual who's being prophesied from the tribe of Judah. This, of course, is the promised seed that's spoken of in Genesis 3:15. And as we've said, it is the one identified by the Apostle Paul in Galatians 3:16 as being referred to by God in Genesis 22 verse 18. Now if you go to Numbers 23 quickly, we're not going to spend a lot of time there, but Numbers 23 verses 18 through 24, an oracle of the false prophet Balaam, of course he is made into a true prophet against his will because God speaks through him. He is hired by Balak to curse Israel, but God makes him bless Israel. And this is one of the blessings in verse 18 and following. This refers to the nation of Israel. And some things are said about the nation of Israel, for example, that they will come up out of Egypt, verse 22, which reminds us of the Abrahamic covenant in Genesis 15, and that they are like a lion, verse 24, that reminds us of what was spoken about the singular seed by Jacob. But this is talking about the seed of Israel. Now look at chapter 24 and verse 3 and following. Then he took up his oracle and said, "The utterance of Balaam the son of Beor." By the way, they have actually found inscriptions from the 8th century BC that speak about Balaam. So we know Balaam not just from the pages of Scripture, but also from other texts that we've found. But to continue, "The utterance of the man whose eyes were opened, the utterance of him who hears the words of God, who sees the vision of the Almighty, who falls down with eyes wide open. How lovely are your tents, O Jacob, your dwellings, O Israel, like valleys that stretch out, like gardens by the riverside, like aloes planted by the Lord, like cedars beside the waters. He shall pour water from his buckets, and his seed shall be in many waters." So this is blessings being given to the people of Israel. When is this going to happen? Well, let's jump forward to verse 14. "And now indeed I am going to my people. Come, I will advise you what this people will do to your people in the latter days." Notice that, in the latter days. Okay, continuing in verse 7. "His king shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. God brings him," singular, "out of Egypt." Now, if you've got "God brings them out of Egypt," then you have a mistranslation there, because that is a singular pronoun that's used there. It is "God brings him out of Egypt." You say, well, why is that important? Well, that's important because that text is quoted by Hosea in Hosea chapter 11, verse 1, or at least it is referenced by the prophet Hosea. And Matthew picks up on that in his gospel and refers it to Jesus Christ. So continuing in Numbers 24, 8. "God brings him out of Egypt. He has strength like a wild ox. He shall consume the nations, his enemies. He shall break their bones and pierce them with his arrows. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion who shall rouse him?" That's a quotation from Genesis 49:9, the poem that we've just read from Jacob's blessing. And then, as we noted before, there is a quotation from Genesis 12:3. "Blessed is he who blesses you, and cursed is he who curses you." And so that involves the Abrahamic covenant. Then, as we've said in verse 14, Balaam is going to predict what's going to happen in the latter days. And so, verse 15, "He took up his oracle and said, the utterance of Balaam, the son of Beor, the utterance of the man whose eyes are opened, the utterance of him who hears the words of God, and has the knowledge of the Most High, who sees the vision of the Almighty, who falls down with eyes wide open. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob. A scepter shall rise out of Israel. Well, which tribe of Israel? We already know because of Genesis 49. The scepter is going to come from Judah. A scepter shall rise out of Israel and batter the brow of Moab and destroy all the sons of tumult. And Edom shall be a possession, Seir also. His enemies shall be a possession while Israel does valiantly. Out of Jacob one shall have dominion and destroy the remains of the city. And then he continues. But he's dealing with one individual who will arise in the latter days and who will have the scepter and who shall destroy his enemies completely. This, of course, is a reference to Jesus at his second coming, when, of course, he comes back to destroy his enemies in the last days and set up his millennial kingdom. Okay, let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 33, and let's look at verses 4 through 7. Now, chapter 33 is Moses' blessing to the children of Israel right before his death, 33:1. And in verse 2, he refers to the giving of the law at Mount Sinai, when Israel was made a people. Now look at verse 4. Moses commanded a law for us, a heritage of the congregation of Jacob. Jacob, of course, is just another name for Israel. And he was king in Jeshurun, when the leaders of the people were gathered, all the tribes of Israel together. Then there's a prediction about Reuben, and then verse 7, and this he said of Judah, hear, Lord, the voice of Judah, and bring him to his people. Let his hands be sufficient for him, and may you be a help against his enemies. Now what we have in verse 5 is a prediction of a king who will gather all the people in Israel together in peace. He's called the king in Jeshurun. Jeshurun is a name that implies uprightness and is God's pet name for Israel. And then in verse 7 we have a prayer for Moses that he would bring this to pass. Hear, Lord, the voice of Judah, and bring him to his people. It really can be translated, oh, that you would bring him to his people. And so this is a prayer of Moses that God will bring this king into the world. To quote here John Salehammer again in his book, The Meaning of the Pentateuch, page 469, and it's Salehammer that I'm getting most of this material from, so I owe him a great debt of gratitude. He says this, quote, in its prologue, speaking here of Deuteronomy 33, Moses depicts God's appearing to Israel at Mount Sinai and their establishment there as a people. In Deuteronomy 33:5, Moses speaks of a king surrounded by his loyal subjects, the tribes of Israel. Then, addressing Judah, in verse 7, Moses calls on God to fulfill his promise of a king from Judah. In Deuteronomy 33:7, Moses envisions the king's reuniting God's people and pleads earnestly for his arrival. Oh, that you would bring him to his people. End quote. Now, a few pages on, what Salehammer notices is quite interesting. He says that Genesis 49, which of course is quoted in Numbers 24, references Genesis 27. And Numbers 24 also cross-references that section in Genesis 27. And what's further interesting about that is that Genesis 27, in turn, references Genesis 12, which speaks about the calling and covenant with Abraham. In his book, although we're not going to go into it here, Salehammer makes a case for the fact that Deuteronomy 33 is quoting a lot, or at least making a lot of allusions to, Genesis 49, and Jacob's blessing of the tribes. And I think you can see that with a superficial reading. And so there is an inner connection here, what's called an inner textuality, between these different texts in the five books of Moses. So let's have a look at Genesis 27 for a minute. And the part of Genesis 27 that interests us is Isaac's blessing of the supplanter Jacob, who is stealing his brother Esau's birthright here. So Genesis 27, verse 27, "And he came near," this is Jacob coming near to Isaac, "and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his clothing and blessed him and said," now of course this is because Jacob has dressed himself up as Esau, "but here's the blessing, surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine." And that reminds us of some of the words of Balaam in Numbers 24, 6 and 7 about God's blessing of the land. Then Isaac continues, Genesis 27, verse 29, "Let peoples serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren and let your mother's sons bow down to you." What does that remind us of? That reminds us of what Jacob says to Judah in Genesis 49:8. "He whom your brothers shall praise, your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies, your father's children shall bow down before you." Which is obviously a reference to this blessing here in Genesis 27:29. And then, at the end of verse 29, "Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you." Well, of course, we know that that is from Genesis 12:3, and it's quoted by Balaam in Numbers 24. So can you see the interrelationships here in these different quotations? The Pentateuch cites itself, and it does it in a way that it points to this seed, this single person involved in the Abrahamic covenant, who will be a king in the last days, who will unite the tribes of Israel, whose brothers will bow down to him, and the scepter, the kingdom, shall be his in the latter days. Add to this what we've already seen in Genesis 15, verses 3 and 4, where we have an emphasis on the individual seed who will come from Abraham. "One who will come from your own body shall be your heir." That's a singular. And so we have the emphasis on a singular seed there in the Abrahamic covenant. This doesn't do away, of course, and abrogate the seed as a multitude, because that is also dealt with in Genesis 15 and other places. But as I said, these two ideas go together in the seed promise, and especially as part of the Abrahamic covenant. And as we've seen, the Abrahamic covenant is a thing that everything is referenced back to, from allusions and quotations, both by Balaam and by Jacob and by Isaac in Genesis 27, they all hark back to this Abrahamic covenant. And so we've got to take this covenant really seriously, folks, because the writer of the Pentateuch certainly did. Now looking at Exodus 15, which is commonly called the Song of the Redeemed, of course it's the celebration song after the Exodus, we see that there are praises from the children of Israel, praising the attributes of God and his great deeds in bringing the waters upon the Egyptian army, yet saving the people of Israel and taking them through on dry land. And this is called, in fact, a redemption or a purchase of Israel in verse 16. Then we read in verse 17, "You will bring them in and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which you have made for your own dwelling, the sanctuary, O Lord, which your hands have established." Now, of course, at this time, there was no physical sanctuary, there was no tabernacle, and even though when Moses wrote the book of Exodus, there was, of course, a tabernacle standing, this song is a record of what happened right after the Exodus. And so there we have no sanctuary. So what is this sanctuary and this inheritance that's being spoken of in verse 17? If you read it in terms of the other poems in the Pentateuch, then this sanctuary takes on a more eschatological appearance. In other words, it starts to focus not at the time of Israel coming into the land, which would, of course, be 40 years after this, but at the time when God truly does bring in peace to Israel. And so, look at verse 18, "The Lord shall reign forever and ever." If that is taken as a capstan to what is said here, then this would apply quite fittingly to the millennial reign of Jesus Christ, when he comes back and reigns over Israel as King of the Jews. And so again, this points forward, doesn't it, to the coming Redeemer. Now, just a few more things to say here. You might want to study Psalm 72 in this connection. This is a Psalm of Solomon. And Solomon, of course, means peace. Psalm 72 is often interpreted as being a psalm that describes the millennial reign. And there are many allusions to other scriptures in Psalm 72. This is particularly clear in verse 17, which says, "His name shall endure forever. His name shall continue as long as the sun, and men shall be blessed in him. All nations shall call him blessed." Now that second part can be translated, "and in him all the nations will be blessed." And that is a text which, as we've seen, is also quoted by Jeremiah in Jeremiah 4:2. But this is a quotation from the Abrahamic covenant, particularly Genesis 22:18, and that important strategic verse, "In your seed all the nations of the earth will be blessed." Seed there is to be taken as a singular because of Paul's interpretation of it, as we've seen in Galatians 3:16, where he specifically attributes it to Jesus Christ. That being the case then, Psalm 72:17, the second part of that, is talking about Christ. And because it is quoting from the Abrahamic covenant, it should be part of the prophecies of the promised seed. And so I hope you can see from these passages and the poems and the allusions to them and direct quotations from them how they give a portrait of the coming Christ, the promised seed. And they all track it back to the Abrahamic covenant. Now, why do they track it back to the Abrahamic covenant? Well, for a very good reason. The Abrahamic covenant, as we shall see, cannot find its fulfillment until Christ comes and brings salvation and introduces the new covenant. And so, in very important ways, the Pentateuch looks forward not to the Mosaic covenant, which of course it records, but beyond the Mosaic covenant to the making of the new covenant in Jesus Christ. The new covenant which has been made with the church and will be made in the future at the second coming of Christ with the nation of Israel in fulfillment of the terms of the Abrahamic covenant. You see, the Abrahamic covenant did not have any means whereby it could find fulfillment because human beings keep sinning all the time. They keep messing up. And so if God is going to come through on his obligations in that covenant, something's going to have to change on the human side so that he can actually bless in perpetuity the nation of Israel and all the nations of the earth through that promise and that covenant without blessing them for being sinners. No, the change, you see, comes about on the basis of the new covenant. And as we will see in the next course, it is the new covenant in Jesus Christ which is the means that God will use to bring about the fulfillment of all the rest of his obligations in the biblical covenants. And so it's not surprising that we find that in line with the terms of the Abrahamic covenant and the promises within them, that the promise passages and the poems in the Pentateuch point to this one promised seed, this end-time ruler, this one who will bring peace, who will establish the kingdom forever and ever, Jesus Christ.